I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 178. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, Griff. I've been here a few weeks in a row. I'm getting to feel like I'm a regular.
Well, you may be the regular. I don't know. Maybe we have to give Rebecca her notice.
No, can't do that.
She'll be back next week. She's been very busy. Yeah,
she has been.
It's been a busy week here at eBay.
You know, it's been a busy year. Like right off the gate. I mean, like it's been busy since January. We've been running.
Yeah, we've been earning our paychecks.
Yes.
So before we get to this week's news, we have a correction and clarification for our previous episode, which was about 1099K with Manish Belsari. You may remember that one.
I do. And we do have a correction. So a couple episodes ago, we hosted eBay colleague Manish, and we talked about the new law for reporting a form 1099K. In the podcast, Manish said that the $600 threshold is calculated based on the date on which your item sold and not the date on which you receive money in your account. A couple of our sellers pointed out to us that this is an incorrect statement. So we asked Manish and the team, and they provided the following correction. To calculate the $600 threshold for the Form 1099-K reporting amount, eBay uses the settlement date when that amount becomes available in the seller's eBay account.
Right, that's correct. And one more clarification on the subject of Form 1099-K is that the amount that's reported on your 1099-K is the total sales amount. The reported amount on your Form 1099-K could be different from the sum total of payments you received from eBay, which may include adjustments like eBay fees and any refunds. I think that clarifies it, but if there's any questions, you can send them to podcast@ebay.com. We'll do our best to answer them.
The gross is the key word there, the gross amount.
Gross amount, exactly. It doesn't include anything that may be your expenses or your refund.
So we refund you because let's say a buyer returns an item.
Yeah.
And we return fees to you.
Right. So you may get a fee refund.
But do we back that out?
No. Because it's payments coming in, not going out. For example, we have a question in our Q&A section, which is enormous this week,
yes,
about voided labels and about those refunds. So if you get a refund for a voided label, that's not included in that total payout.
You know,
think of it as just the payments that are coming in from buyers.
You know what this reminds me of, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I have a small rental property, and I use an agency to actually run it. They find the renters.
Oh, stuff. You're a landlord. I love this.
But they send me a 1099.
Of course they do.
And it's grossed out. So I have to go in and say, okay, what management fees did I pay? What expenses were, you know, did the plumbing break? Or, you know, what taxes did I pay? Mm-hmm. All of those things have to get backed out. I don't tell the IRS I earned that gross amount.
The company that helps eBay send out 1099Ks accidentally sent 2021 1099Ks to a bunch of California sellers who, like myself, and I think you as well.
Yes,
who
I
didn't
got one
meet,
as well.
Who didn't meet last year's earlier threshold, but I'm glad I got mine because it actually has the gross amount of payments, and now I can use this when I'm working out my tax form to fill out and send to our accountant. I'm
and it does
I
say that
mine.
Both of us did at least $600 in sales last
year.
Oh,
I did more than 600.
I'm sure you did.
I'll tell you, I did 12,000.
Whoa.
So there.
Gosh, I got some work to do.
Well, you know, I feel I need to keep skin in the game for this one if I'm going to help sellers and answer questions. If I'm not up to date with the experience, then I don't really feel I have a point in answering the question.
It's tougher to answer questions.
Right. And plus, I'm getting rid of the stuff that I've collected for the last 25 years that I've bought on eBay. It's a lot of stuff. Hey, what's the big news this week?
So we did have some big news last week. We had the 2022 Winter Seller Update. The headlines for the update are, Selling Manager Pro features are now available free of charge, and there are also some important updates and expansions for promoted listings.
I always thought that Selling Manager Pro had disappeared entirely when we moved to Seller Hub, but that's not true. There were some features that hung on.
Especially for, I think, was it Premium or Anchor Store and above, store subscribers had some other features, and now those features are available to everyone, and there's no cost anymore for those.
That's good news.
It is good news. There are also updates to help with the running of your business, including reducing unpaid items for accepted offers. Big ask from our sellers over the years.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Updates to how feedback is displayed and collected. Updates to fee credits and below standard final value fees.
Mm-hmm.
And a brand new messaging experience on the eBay app.
That reducing the unpaid items for accepted offers, it's an immediate pay feature, right? So for a buyer who accepts an offer, or if a buyer makes an offer and the seller accepts it, now that money is immediately taken from the buyer's account, which is one more step towards immediate payment for everything, including someday, we hope, auctions.
You know, we should have had one of those little audio things where it goes cha-ching when we were talking about that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I wonder if through the magic of editing, I could have put one in.
I don't know. I'll have to find out next Tuesday.
Yeah, and the update to fee credits is you get that 30% back in a case of a canceled transaction.
The 30 cents, yeah.
Return, yeah. And below standard.
And that was also one of those things that sellers just didn't understand because the transaction didn't go through. They got all their other fees back and they thought, why am I paying this 30 cent transaction? There was no transaction.
Yeah, it's great.
Which that was a really good change as well.
And then the big one, we saved for last.
We did save for last. There are fee updates to note, which include final value fee changes across categories and a subtitle listing upgrade fee for fixed priced and auction listings.
Who uses subtitles?
I don't.
Why would you need one?
I could imagine there are some use cases where maybe it makes sense. And maybe one of our listeners will write in and tell us like why and how they use subtitle.
Yeah.
But I agree. I can't even remember the last time I used it.
I don't think I've ever used it. It's always cost money.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, all right. And of course, fee increases. They're inevitable. It's business, right?
It is. And this one was, well, I shouldn't say this. I'll let our listeners say it. I felt overall it was moderate, but not all of our listeners and not all of our community members felt the same.
There was, and I forget where it was, if it was on the Facebook eBay for Business page, where a seller that you and I know pretty well,
yes,
DH, actually posted something that was extremely funny about Little Debbie cakes.
Yes.
Right, if you want to, we'll put a link to that in the transcript, but we won't go any further.
He brought a really good perspective to it and how it would impact his business.
Yeah.
And it was wasn't big enough really for him to worry about.
Yeah.
So, as we do for every seller update, there is a full section on the eBay site that goes into detail about every aspect of the update, as well as a discussion board within the community for you to ask your questions about the update.
Of course, that's closed now. They closed last Friday.
It is.
Yeah. But you can still read about it. So,
yes. eBay staff members have been in there since Wednesday through Friday answering questions.
Yeah. So if you have questions and you want to see if they were already asked, do visit that discussion board. If you still have questions, hey, we got a big crate full of mugs. We're happy to give away. So send them here. We're happy to take all of your questions.
We are happy to take their questions at podcast@ebay.com.
Yeah. And you can find links to the detail page and the discussion forum in the announcement for the winter seller update posted at ebay.com/announcements.
That's a pretty easy URL to remember.
It sure is.
So who's our guest this week?
Well, no guest, Brian. It's just you and me and a shipload of questions. Shall we begin?
A shipload. I guess so. You got questions?
Oh, boy, do we have questions. And oh, boy, do we have answers. I can't believe how many questions we have this week. And in fact, this entire segment, this entire episode is all about your questions.
All about our sellers' questions?
Well, that's who I was talking to. You didn't think I was talking to you. Right?
Well, I thought maybe I would start it off with one question.
Oh, what's the question, Brian?
Now, Griff, do you have a pad and paper and pen with you?
Well, I do right here. What?
Look at that. I was just making sure after our conversation last week.
Oh, I don't go anywhere with
that. I just wanted to make sure you still had it and you haven't converted yet to laptops.
Nope. This old Luddite will never convert. I'll always keep a mechanical pencil. Right here. I have several, in fact, and my notebook.
Perfect.
Shall we begin?
I think we should. We've got a shipload, I believe.
A shipload. It's
is it anchored off of Long Beach?
Could be stuck in the supply chain. Our first question, or questions in this case, come from eBay sellers Carson and Tiffany, who both coincidentally emailed podcast@ebay.com with the same question. But I'll start with Carson, who says, hey, guys, in the last podcast, someone asked a question about the rules regarding what sellers are allowed to include in packages they ship to buyers. For example, thank you cards, business cards, etc. You guys said there are no restrictions and eBay would not interfere with whatever was put in the packages. Does this remain the same for packages, specifically sneakers, that are shipped to eBay authentication centers before the buyer gets them? Are you still able to include thank you notes, social media handles, website addresses, and anything else? Look forward to listening to future podcasts. Love the helpful information. Oh, isn't that nice?
It is.
You guys provide all while having fun at the same time. So someone noticed we have fun doing this podcast.
We do.
Yeah. At least you make it seem like it. Ha ha, says Carson. Thanks.
We actually do have fun. Well, I do.
Oh, come on. Are you kidding? Look, and I pinch myself every morning. I wake up and say, wait a minute, I have a job that lets me have fun?
Exactly.
Someone asked when I was going to retire. I just laughed. Why would I retire?
Yeah.
When I'm 95, I plan to be the Betty White of eBay.
So that kidding. Means 99.
I'll do it. I'll make it to 99.
So we also have another question along the same topic from Tiffany, who wrote, "Hi, Griff." Tiffany, I'm a little disappointed you didn't say hi, Brian.
Well, you can always add it in. And Brian.
I'm just giving Tiffany a hard time. My husband and I have a question about something we heard on the past show. You talked about how you get thank you cards with your purchases, and that refers to your person's website. I thought that was not allowed. I have really nice product cards for my products, but never include them in my shipments because there is a website listed on the card. My husband says that I am mistaken, and that rule applies to the messaging system on eBay. Could you please advise? Thanks. Love the podcast. Tiffany, store name, Nice Finds 27. So, Griff,
yeah.
Didn't we answer this question already?
We did. However, it appears that some listeners, Carson and Tiffany, found our response incredulous. So we'll take this opportunity to reiterate what we said back then. Now, Carson and Tiffany, sit down. I have something to tell you. Are you seated? Good. There are no restrictions regarding what you put in your outgoing parcels for eBay sales in the way of your own marketing materials. None.
Zero. And Carson, that goes for items shipped to the authentication service as well. All eBay cares about is that the package contains the item you sold, period.
So Tiffany, your husband is correct. You can put whatever marketing collateral you want in your outgoing parcels of items sold on eBay, including material that points to your own website or even some other selling platforms.
And we don't control that aspect of your business. How could we? Why would we?
It would be impossible, Brian. We'd have to create a nationwide police force to examine your parcels. Now, I know some sellers think that we here at eBay can be a little sometimes, should I say, heavy-handed, but we're not the gazpacho.
Did you really say that?
I couldn't avoid getting it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, we hope that you promote your eBay store. Maybe you could put in your eBay store URL on your cards.
Yeah, and you could also make it a QR code so a buyer could just scan it with their mobile phone and go directly to your store.
And you could also provide a discount coupon as a code in your marketing materials too.
Yeah. So. Look, let's just be upfront. Any tactic that helps you make more sales, we're all for.
But promoting your other website or sites? This pains me, Griff.
It's the truth. So just say it.
It is the truth. I have to tell our listeners, this is one where as an eBay employee and someone who used to work in trust for a long time, it's your business, not ours.
Good.
At the same time, it pains me. So promote your eBay store. do that favor for Brian.
You know what I have stuck in my head? Well, I think it's also the practical answer. Really, again, we're not the gazpacho. We can't come to your house.
And we can't open everyone's package and see what they put in.
And nor would we. I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah. But I remember you, this is before you were even here, I think, when Pierre was active on the website in the first years or two. He used to say this all the time when he was asked. He'd say, look, whatever you need to do to make yourself successful, we're glad you're selling. I'm glad you're selling on Auction Web, eBay. But whatever you need to do to be successful, we're okay with it. You know, if that means your own website or selling on Yahoo.com, auctions, whatever that was at the time, be our guest. We're not going to tell you have to only sell here.
Right. And I don't think we would ever restrict people in that manner. Well, and we couldn't, right? No. But I think for me, Pierre also, what did he say? He said, it's also eBay's responsibility to earn your business. And so if we're doing a great job, you're not going to be inclined to put your other website on there. You're going to be inclined to point back to the eBay store.
Yeah. Well put, Brian. I hope we finally cleared that up. But I suspect, Brian, we're still going to get emails on this topic.
I bet we will. And every time I give the answer, I'll still cringe a little because I spent 7 years in trust. And we don't allow this kind of stuff in emails or member-to-member messaging.
Yeah, so, and that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can't be pointing people off, or even in your listing, you can't be pointing someone off to, you know, your website or another marketplace.
Yeah, but we're realistic. We know, look, we have no control over your parcels, and we're not going to pretend we do. Knock yourself out.
And I think Tiffany said she's got a nice card that she's put together.
Yeah.
Gosh, use it. You put the time and effort into making that card.
Yeah, stick nice. Them in the boxes.
So put it in the box and market.
Yeah.
Our next question is from eBay seller Ken, who sent this to podcast@ebay.com. Hello, I was just listening to your podcast about business policies. I have kept up with mine well over time, but have always wondered about some settings for international shipping.
Hmm.
Within the shipping settings, there is a checkbox to include offering global shipping. Then there is an area to set up alternative international shipping options. These alternatives would normally be USPS First Class International or eBay International Standard Delivery. The alternatives are a cheaper option for the buyer. My question is, if I add these cheap alternatives to my listings, it seems as if global shipping is no longer offered at all, no matter if I have the box checked or not. Is this correct? It is difficult to go to a different country's eBay site to see what it is that they see. So I was hoping you could clarify this for me once and for all. I would prefer that all options, including global shipping, were presented to the buyer. Thank you, Ken. eBay user ID, cards, and stubs.
Well, Ken, thanks for that question. It's really a good one. Your observation, however, is correct. If a seller opts in for the global shipping program, but also offers an alternative method for shipping to any international countries, buyers in those countries will only see the alternative shipping option, not global shipping, and the alternative option together. A seller cannot offer both a non-GSP and a GSP option in a single listing.
And the alternative shipping options are intended for a few possible scenarios. The most common one being sellers who want to ship directly to Canadian buyers without GSP, but want to offer GSP to all other international buyers.
That's right, Brian. And another scenario that's pretty popular would be for sellers who are willing to ship an item to a country to which GSP does not currently ship.
And you can find a list of countries that are currently covered by GSP on the Global Shipping Program help page, the link to which we will include in the transcript for episode 178.
And Ken, it's possible for a seller like yourself to see what an international buyer sees for one of your listings by following these steps. And I do this all the time.
This is going to be helpful.
Yeah. So the first step is to copy the item number for one of your listings, you know, copy it to your computer clipboard. Then you go to another eBay country site, for example, www.ebay.co.uk, which is the UK site. And it's one I constantly go to check up on. Then you paste the item number into the search field for that eBay site. Once your item appears, you should see what the buyer in that country sees, but you may not. You may still see what you would see as a buyer from the US. So if you don't see what the buyer sees, go to the shipping and payment tab underneath the description, or in the UK, it's called the postage and payment tab, and change the country to United Kingdom, and you can leave the postal code text field blank. Then you should see shipping to that buyer on the item page. And if you offer global shipping for that item, it will show all of the fees and VATs and all the details that an international buyer sees. But again, it is not possible for a seller to offer both options internationally. So if you offer GSP, that seller in the UK does not have the option to say, it says global shipping here, and maybe I can just use not global shipping. They only get that one option.
That's some good info and good clarification as well.
Thank you. Now, our next question was emailed to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Elisa, who says, "Good morning, Griff. As Brian may have told you, and he did, I'm the buyer that has various shipping policies, and I have them named something simple that I know what they are at a glance. For example, she has things like MM Free, MM395, FCFS, and then a whole bunch of others. And her naming convention is MM equals Media Mail, FC equals first class, and FS equals free shipping, and GSP obviously means the global shipping program. This is just a sample," she says. "I have so many that I have to scan through the list. My question is there a way that we can sort these alphabetically as a default for when listing an item? It would be much easier for me and my hubby to scan and select rather than reading each line. Thanks for the podcast. Love listening every week. Elisa, whose user ID on eBay is Dublin's Treasure Isle."
Well, hello, Elisa. I really love your naming convention. To me, it makes a lot of sense, and I might steal it.
I think it's great. I think it's better than mine. So, Elisa, I played around with this to test and see what happens, and it appears that no matter how you sort the list of policies on the business policy page, the order they appear in the drop-down box during the listing process is by most used on top to the bottom where they show the least used. And there doesn't seem to be any way to circumvent this particular sort order.
Should we send a suggestion to the product team?
Absolutely. So consider it there.
Wait.
Forwarded and done.
That wasn't a notepad and pen.
Well, Brian, I do use my computer occasionally. Thank you.
I know you do.
Jeez. So, Elisa, yeah, we'll send it in as a suggestion.
That's a really good suggestion. Although I will say this, the default sort order, the way that we do it with most common, also makes sense because
it does.
But I could see someone like Elisa where she's got a whole bunch of them and she goes, look, I know it's FC, whichever version. So she just wants to quickly get to the FCs. And if it was alphabetical, boom, she could get to it really quick.
So I say make the default the way it is now, but allow the seller the option to sort it the way they want it. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with giving the seller what they want in this case.
I think David's going to get an email from us or Tawan or one of them.
David already got the email. I just forwarded it.
Good. So this next question is from eBay seller Adam, who, like all our sellers this week, emailed the following to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, longtime listener to the podcast and love the work you all do. I've been a seller for 3 years now. ADA_522 is his username, and have noticed some weird patterns. Every time I go on vacation, I unlist my stuff and then relist when I get back. Every time I do this, items that have sat for 6 months with not much traffic and very little interest will sell. These are really oddball items that I have picked up through the thrifting and learning phase that did not sell very well. It's like clockwork, though. I can unlist and relist these items and one or two will sell. Is this just a weird coincidence? Or do things with little interest get buried in the algorithms and then put back on top for a brief time after relisting? Thanks, Adam R.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, the answer is it's a mystery.
Ooh, it's spooky. It's all these spirits. We have no idea.
No, but seriously, there are too many possible reasons why stale items are sometimes suddenly sold after they have been relisted. So many, in fact, that we could never nail down just one solid reason.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of sellers believe in this process of relisting. And I don't think there's anything wrong with ending a stale old listing and relisting it. But I would emphasize that this strategy should only be used under two conditions. Number one, I'd make changes to the stale listing before I relisted it. For example, new photos maybe, or a new title and description, maybe a lower price. Now, all these different features, check the item specifics, all that. And I would only use it for truly stale listings. I know some people who end all of their listings and relist them. Not good.
So why those two conditions, Griff?
Well, because like I say, you might be tempted to keep ending and relisting all your listings. And that's not only a lot of work, but it can also be counterintuitive and counterproductive. If you relist them with new item numbers, for example, you're going to lose any watchers or worse, those buyers who might have those older listings in their shopping cart, which a lot of people do.
Yes. People will watch and stick stuff in a cart and then come back to it later on.
And you're going to miss them. They're going to go.
Right. And if you relist them with the relist this item feature, the buyer would have to actively scan their watch list if they were watching it and rewatch it. This is extra work for the buyer and they may not do it.
This happens to me all the time because I'll watch items and then if I don't go into my watch list and look for the where it says seller relisted item, then it's gone from my list. And not every buyer does this. And in fact, I often miss out on items because of this. So yeah, I don't recommend it as a strategy overall.
No. And I would posit most buyers don't do that. I mean, you're an experienced buyer and you know that that's what you can do is go in to look at your watch list. Our next question this week comes from eBay seller Greg, who sent this to podcast@ebay.com. Some sellers on the eBay community help forums claim that USPS will never, under any circumstances, refund a request that is purchased and voided through the eBay platform.
What?
You hear some crazy things.
Yeah.
This always seemed unbelievable to me, but now I'm thinking it might actually be true because I've submitted two label refund requests the past 90 days and I don't see any record of a refund. When I search all types of transactions, hold, other fee, adjustments, etc. under the payments tab, I don't see any type of refund. I hope the conspiracy theories are false and USPS is not treating its customers in this manner. One of my label refund requests was for $25 shipping label where I simply had the wrong weight entered. Thank you, Greg, Online Depot.
Oh, Greg. Greg, you really can't believe this outrageous, ludicrous conspiracy theory even has a scintilla of truth, do you? What these sellers are describing, well, it's absolutely untrue, Greg. All accepted voided label refund requests are processed and the money returned to the seller. This is the problem.
But I think Greg said he did submit it and he couldn't find it.
Yeah, that's what he said, because he's not looking in the right place. But he's listening to these rabble-rousing conspiracy theorists that somehow USPS is granting the request and never paying the money. And that's just, wait, I'm going to be really blunt. It's a lie. It's an absolute lie. So I think it's probably indicative of the spread right now of false information, conspiracies. Did you hear?
We don't have any of those.
We've had our fair share over the years, haven't we, Brian?
Not at eBay.
Yeah, no, of course not. But so, Greg, rest assured, you received a refund for those voided labels.
So absolutely, Greg. Your voided label refund destination would depend on how your label was funded.
Mm-hmm.
If you funded the label through PayPal, then the refund would show up in your PayPal account.
Exactly. You would log into PayPal, as you normally do, and then search through recent transactions to find it. It is there.
But if your funding method was eBay payouts, that is, using your pending funds balance, then the refund will go back to that funding method and would show up in the payout page of Seller Hub.
That's right. And Greg, here's how you find it. You go to eBay, then you go to Seller Hub, and then you click the payments tab, and then the payouts link on the left-hand side of that page. You can scroll through your recent payouts, and you'll see each one as a number. And you can click through each one in order to find the payout that contains your voided label refund. But if you focus in on payouts from about roughly 14 days after the label was voided, you should find it.
You know, Graf?
What?
Greg could also create a payout report to download in view.
Yes, he could.
That report will show each payout's details in a spreadsheet. Just click Reports on the left-hand side of the Payments page and select Payouts for the type of report.
Mm-hmm.
Select a time window for the report and then Create.
I love those reports. One more point. You can always see if a voided label request was accepted by USPS by going to the Shipping Labels page. You'll find the label and it'll say Void Requested and then Accepted. Very rarely do they reject one. But I've never had any request for a label that I voided rejected. It's always accepted.
Right.
And you'll always get a refund. Once it's accepted, you get a refund and the money's there. You just know where to find it. And in this case, it'll be in your payouts if that's the way it was funded. By the way, Brian, I sent this answer to Greg and he responded. He said, Griff, I see it in one of the payout reports 15 days after my refund request. So another conspiracy theory vanquished. Thank you for being generous and patient with your time. Let me finish, because he says, very gracious of you, Greg.
That was very nice of him. And I would say, you know, a little tweak maybe to the guidance that we gave him, because he said he saw it 15 days after my refund request. Hmm. So maybe when running the reports, go 15 days.
Well, that's what I said, approximately 14 days. It's not exact science.
Exactly. But
it's roughly 2 weeks after you make the request that you usually get the refund. There could be a weekend day there where the, you know, USPS is not doing it for whatever reason.
There's a part of me, I can see how the conspiracy theories come up on that one.
Well,
given the multiple ways you can pay and the multiple places that the refund might show up.
Right. And if anyone is listening to this and they're a adherent to this particular conspiracy theory, please send me the details at podcast@ebay.com and we will show you where your refund was. We'll lead you right to it. I just need dates and an item number.
Well, and hopefully all of them will just use pending payments and then they know where to go, because you're already on Seller Hub, so you just go find it there. Or do the report like you suggested.
Right. And if you do use PayPal, and a lot of people do, you're just going to have to find it. It's going to go into your PayPal account. It's a good bypass anything on the eBay payment side. And now on to our next question, or shall I say questions. It was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Mary, who writes, Hi, Griff. My name is Mary, and my eBay store is appealing fines, not to be confused with appealing signs, Rich and Nyla.
Yes.
I've been selling a little bit of everything on eBay for over 20 years. I have three questions. Okay, and we're going to cover them all.
Is that allowed? Oh, of course it's allowed. I'm joking.
Yeah, no, we have the rules on the eBay podcast. You cannot ask more than one question. I'm Frog.
What was that 1960s show, Stalag 13? Were you in that?
It was a movie. That wasn't a TV show.
Wasn't it a TV show?
No, you're thinking of Hogan's Heroes.
Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah, right.
It was a playoff of that movie.
Even as a child, I found it a little upsetting that they were making a comedy about a World War II prisoner of war camp, but there it is. Yes. Anyway, Mary's first question is, I'm in the Eastern time zone. Is there a way to change the default from Pacific Standard Time to an Eastern Standard Time? For example, when I run a sale, I have to convert PST to EST. It may seem like a small thing, but the small things add up to operating more efficiently. So that's her first question. Her second
question. Should we answer? Oh, no.
No.
Go right through. Good for you.
Oh, God.
Stay disciplined.
My second question. I understand that priority mail comes with $50 of insurance. When buying postage on eBay, is this already factored in? For example, to cover a $200 item, do I choose $150 worth of insurance or $200? And finally, her third question. Occasionally, buyers ask me to invoice them. Doesn't eBay already email the buyer an invoice when they purchase? Thank you for answering my questions and for doing a great job with the podcast. It's my go-to for keeping up with all things eBay. Signed, Mary. P.S. I wouldn't turn down a mug.
Good, because we're going to send her one.
Absolutely. She's on the list.
Thank you, Mary. Three questions?
Yeah, Mary, three questions.
Mary, three questions. Right. She didn't give us a last name. So, Mary, we'll take these one at a time, starting with the questions about changing the time zone. Changing the displayed time zone, alas, no, that is not possible. On eBay.com, the default clock is based on eBay headquarters, which is PST. This is not a configurable option for the seller.
Yeah, Mary, it's with good reason. The importance of one consistent clock is critical in keeping all buyers and sellers updated as to the listing, and more specifically, for example, like auction format listing closing times. If we allowed for reconfiguring this, it could turn into a disaster. So, yes, I know if you're not living in the Pacific Standard Time Zone, you're going to have to, in your case, add 3 hours. I understand, but no, that's not going to be changeable.
Yeah, just be glad you're not in Australia. So, strike one for Mary on that question.
Yeah, that's true. But I think we have a better shot with the second question about USPS priority insurance. As per usual, I checked in with our good friend Nate Hayward on the shipping team to determine the accurate response, so I wanted to make sure I got it right. And here's what I learned. With USPS, $50 worth of insurance is automatically included within the label cost of the service on priority mail. That's including on eBay. eBay Labels also offers the ability to purchase additional insurance with either USPS or with ShipCover.
However, I believe that if you want to insure the USPS priority package for more than $50, you have to purchase up to $100 for $3.15 and so on based on their rate table.
Yeah, and this is a little confusing, so I'll go over this. So, for example, if a seller sells an item for $200, which is Mary's scenario, and wants to insure it for the total sales price of $200, then they have to purchase $200 worth of insurance. You would enter that amount in the insurance field. If they only wanted to have $150 worth of coverage for that $200 item, then they would enter in $150 in the insurance field. For anything over the default $50, for USPS priority, by the way, the seller is going to have to pay the rate shown on the insurance page for USPS. As Nate said, it's not additive. For any parcel, you're going to get up to $50 free. If you want anything over $50 and the next increment is $100, then you have to pay the rate for $100, which I looked up, and it's $3.15. And I forget what the rate for $200 is, but it's, you know, it goes up.
Can you only buy in $100 increments?
I think it's $50.
Okay.
I think it's $50.
So to insure her parcel of $200, she would have to enter $200 in the insurance line item.
Right.
And then can raise a claim with the insurance party, USPS or ShipCover.
Which is the other option. We're going to talk about that.
Okay. Should the package be lost or damaged or anything else go awry?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and by the way, Nate wanted to make sure that we give a friendly plug to ShipCover, which he claims is a much better, much smoother, and much faster claims experience. And also, it's cheaper. Says Nate, quote, USPS has an extremely slow claims process. ShipCover offers $100 worth of coverage for only $1.70. Wow. And that's compared to USPS's $3.15 for that $100. And they pay out claims fast with a much easier process.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So the link to ShipCover is simple. It's www.shipcover.com. And the option for buying insurance from ShipCover is built into the print label flow. And now, finally, to Mary's third question about buyers asking for invoices. To refresh, she said, occasionally buyers ask me to invoice them. Doesn't eBay already email the buyer an invoice when they purchase? Well, Mary, sort of. The buyer receives an email notice from eBay with information for their purchase. It might be considered an invoice of sorts. If the buyer has already paid for the item, the email is an order update. If the buyer hasn't yet paid for the item, for example, they won an auction but haven't paid, the email subject is, "You won. Pay now to receive."
Yeah, the only time a buyer would require the seller to send them an invoice is if the seller does not require immediate payment and the buyer wants to pay for a purchase or group of purchases. This is an older legacy way of finishing a transaction on eBay, usually for sellers who allow buyers to add multiple items to their shopping cart or sellers who allow buyers to win a group of auctions and then pay for them all at once. And sometimes the seller will want to do this to offer them a purchase discount or shipping discount. If you're not providing this option, and by the way, I don't recommend it. We have tools now that actually make this a lot easier in the
marketing tab under Seller Hub.
Yeah, for promotions. You know, there's different types of promotions you do. Anyway, there is no reason for a buyer to require a seller provide an invoice otherwise.
We hope this helps, Mary.
You can keep an eye out for that mug, by the way. It's on its way. And now, Brian, it's on to our next question of the week.
This was indeed a shipload of questions. How many so far?
I don't know. I lost count, but I think it's either 8 or 9 counting this next question.
Is that a record for one episode?
I believe it may be. So gold medal to this episode from most questions answered in one episode.
The Podcast Olympics.
Yay.
What is our 9th and final question? Well, is it our final question?
I don't think it is. I may have missed
out. Maybe we've got an extra one.
Yeah, I think there's a bonus. Well, anyway, this question comes from Barbara, who emailed podcast.com. And I warn you up front, it's a controversial topic among sellers. So why don't you read it?
Hello, Griffin Brian. For the second time this month, I had a customer purchase an item and request that I delay shipping for 2 weeks. I did a search for the issue on the eBay site, and the answers are all over the map. From asking the customer to cancel the order and repurchase it later, to sending the packing slip only so the tracking shows on-time delivery.
Ooh, that's not a good thing to do.
To just doing what the customer requested and taking the late shipping ding. Unfortunately, the automated chat feature on eBay Help does not cover this issue, though should, because I get at least 4 to 5 times per year. Does eBay have a best practices policy regarding this? And if so, what is it? Could you please add this to some official place on the eBay help pages so there is some official guidance for sellers? Thanks, guys. I enjoy your podcast. I already have a mug. No need for another. Maybe a local shelter could use it. Barbara, I see what you mean about a controversial topic, Griff.
Yes, this is definitely an evergreen issue.
Do we have an answer?
Well, I have an answer that I would use, but I wanted to get an official answer from our CS team. So I went to our go-to guy, Tyler.
Good old Tyler. Man. I like Tyler.
And Tyler says, hi, Griff. There really isn't an official eBay answer to this situation. It's whatever the seller is comfortable doing. Though, from a selling performance perspective, if the buyer hasn't paid, there are no quote-unquote dings possible because the clock hasn't started yet. They should fulfill the buyer's request and instruct them not to pay until they're ready for them to ship the item out.
Well, that's an obvious course of action.
Yeah, for that particular scenario, it is.
What about if the buyer's already paid and then makes the request to hold the item for 2 weeks?
Well, I asked that, and Tyler says, if the buyer has paid, the clock has started, and the seller is now looking at what he calls an unfun choice. That's such a waste of words.
Because a ding might be involved.
Well, maybe. They can ship in line with their stated handling time and irritate the buyer, not recommended. Or they can fulfill the request and take a performance hit. That would probably be what I'd do. The thing to emphasize here would be that customer support can manually remove the late shipping ding as long as the buyer's request to delay shipment is in the eBay messages or during the message flow in checkout. What cannot be removed in any case is the tracking uploaded on time and validated metric. That can usually take the hit because that actually has a 5% buffer zone. Or if they're in danger of losing top-rated seller status due to tracking uploaded on time and validated, Tyler says he would probably deny the buyer's request and either ship out on time, again, great way to annoy a buyer, or consider canceling the transaction as an issue with the buyer's address, which I see there's no other way. When you cancel, it doesn't say the buyer made a request to delay shipping. It should be one of the reasons, right?
It should be.
Yeah.
Those sound like reasonable options. The one thing that I want to emphasize, though, is there is a buffer, and there's a buffer for a reason.
Yes.
I mean, sellers make mistakes sometimes, so yeah. The buffer's there for that. We don't expect perfection in seller performance. You know, sometimes you can make a business decision as a seller and say, okay, if this comes up 4 to 5 times a year, if you sell enough stuff,
it's not going to make a difference.
It's probably not going to make a difference to your 5% buffer. So please the buyer.
Barbara, if you only sell 100 items a year and you've got 4 to 5 of these happening, now you're pushing the boundary there.
Right.
If you're selling 500, 1,000 items a year, 4 or 5 of these requests, in my view as a seller, I would just say, sure, happy to wait. Let me know when you're ready to ship it out and I'll take the hit.
And even if you're only selling 50, okay, you can do 1 or 2 and know you're still under the buffer. And as long as you're meeting your performance otherwise, you're still going to be okay.
Yeah.
That was a good question. I'm glad we got that in from Barbara.
I like these all question episodes. We should do more.
We should. Maybe like we have like a regular episode show. I wonder if our dear listeners would like to hear more all question episodes though.
I know. Let's ask them. Would you like to hear more all question episodes? Let us know at podcast@ebay.com. By the way, I looked in the pile and that definitely was the last question of the day.
So it was 9.
Yeah, it was 9 questions.
Reminds me of a Beatles song.
Number 9.
Number 9. Now I'm aging myself.
Dating. You're dating. Dating. Right.
But to have all question episode, we need questions. So if you have a question.
Or you just want a mug.
You have to provide a question to get a mug.
How many do we have left, by the way?
A diminishing supply.
Uh-oh. You mean it's a finite amount of mugs? Well, then don't delay. Call in your question right now at 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. You can call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week. Leave a question or a comment, and we just might put it on the air. If you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And this week's podcast to-do list is the generic to-do list with one little tweak, and I'll tell you what it is in a minute.
Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Go visit the eBay community page and take part in the discussions for Discuss This Podcast. We put the link in the episode transcripts.
That's right.
But there's also, if you go up to the podcast header and then hover over it, there's a Discuss the Podcast. And I'm there all week answering questions that come in. We're starting to see some questions. We would love to get your question there, too.
It's a great way to interact with Griff. And maybe I'll even pop in.
Oh, dear.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, well, we may have a shipping team update, or we might not. I'm still waiting. It's like stale items once relisted, sometimes suddenly sell. It's a mystery.
Griff, griff, griff. Now we're getting another question about that one.
Yes, we will.
We'd like to again thank all of the sellers who sent in or called in their questions this week. So please continue to do so.
Yeah, no one called in, but we like to dream they will call in. 888-723-4630. And don't stop sending them in. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.